Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, March 6th, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for tuning in. On today's show, Robert Barr and Andy Kirsch will give us a library update. We'll get the details on this Saturday's Discovery Southeast auction and dinner with guests Allison Smith and Sean Isley. Katrina Wolford will highlight the upcoming Northwoods Writer Symposium. We'll get an update on science, technology, engineering, and math in the schools. And we'll hear from Paula Poundstone. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note Music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 29 degrees here in the capital city with overcast skies, a few sucker holes here and there.
With National Native News, I'm Daisha Eaton in for Antonia Gonzalez. Three women have come forward publicly in a national public radio story accusing Native American author Sherman Alexie of sexual misconduct. The NPR story indicates three women spoke on the record, but the reporters talked to 10 women total. They allege a pattern of behavior in which Alexie used his status as a famous writer to lure the women into sexual situations. The allegations range from inappropriate comments to unwanted advances. Some of the women say the behavior led to consensual encounters that abruptly ended. As talk about accusations increased last week, Alexie issued a blanket statement admitting that he has harmed others. Alexie did not provide details, but said there are women telling the truth and apologized to the people he hurt. National Native News reached out to Alexie's publicist, but did not have a response before deadline. Alexie is Coeur d'Alene Indian and grew up on the Spokane Indian Reservation. He is one of the country's best-known Native American poets and writers, winning the National Book Award in 2007 for his young adult novel, The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian. He also wrote the screenplay for the film Smoke Signals, based on his short stories. Representatives for tribes fighting President Trump's executive order reducing Bears Ears National Monument boundaries say they're appalled by new revelations indicating mining and oil and gas development drove the process. A coalition of five tribes that worked in favor of establishing federal monument protections issued a statement accusing the Trump administration of improperly relying on state and congressional elected leaders and extraction companies in setting new boundaries. Sean Chapoose, chairman of the Ute Indian Tribe Business Committee, says the administration's actions show disrespect to the tribes, who should have more of a say in the decision.
Simple fact is, I wasn't shocked, but it just more or less verified what we already knew was happening, you know, during this whole process.
Chapoose says the new information adds fuel to the lawsuit by tribes and others claiming the president's decision overstepped his authority and was based on inadequate input. Late last week, the New York Times printed a story based on emails by agency officials and elected leaders. The Times says the messages reveal mining and oil development were key to the final decision on the monument boundaries. Navajo Nation officials say they're one step closer to improving emergency notifications when children are abducted or go missing. The U.S. House of Representatives approved the bill to expand Amber Alert systems on tribal lands. Many reservations lack emergency notifications in cases of missing or abducted children, KNAU's Ryan Heinches reports.
The bill makes Department of Justice grants and other training programs available to establish Amber Alert systems on often remote reservations. It would also integrate tribes with state and county notifications. The bill was named for 11-year-old Ashlyn Mike, who was abducted and murdered near Shiprock, New Mexico, on the Navajo Nation in 2016. Nearly a day passed after she disappeared before an alert was issued. The tribe installed its own notification system last month. Harlan Cleveland is the Amber Alert Coordinator for the Navajo Department of Emergency Management.
Time is of the essence in any emergency, especially in a child abduction. And once law enforcement gets on scene, conducts their investigation, interviews people, we're able to push that alert a lot faster, get that information out to safely recover that child.
The U.S. Senate in November passed its own version of the Amber Alert legislation, introduced by Arizona Republican John McCain. The House bill now goes back to the Senate for its consideration. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff, Arizona.
And I'm Daisha Eaton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by BNSF Railway, moving our economy for over 165 years. Our vision is to operate injury and accident-free with safety programs, training, and technology. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations. Support by the AAIP and Million Hearts Think Heart Symposium. Strategies for managing high blood pressure, March 14th in Oklahoma City. Registration deadline is March 5th at aaip.org/events.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 6th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour, and here in the studio now are Robert Barr and Andy Kirsch, and we're going to be talking about all things library today. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. Robert, you're the director of the libraries, Juno Public Libraries. What are you thinking about these days?
Well, we just brought a new database online that I think some people will be interested in. It is called Hoopla, and Hoopla is all about popular ebooks, downloadable audiobooks, comics, music, TV, basically every format that we offer at the library. We also offer online via Hoopla. It's a new online offering, and if you go to our homepage, just juno.org/library, it is promoted. So it's front and center on our homepage right now. It just says Hoopla, and you can click on it to get to it. You need a library card, and you can log in, and it's really awesome. You can check out 5 things there per month. There's no holds. There's no waiting period, no overdue fees. You do need to have a tablet or a mobile device to use it, but it's got a bunch of popular stuff. So if you are a consumer of electronic content, so ebooks and audiobooks and that sort of thing, I would encourage you to hop in there and check it out.
What's it called again?
Hoopla. Yeah, Hoopla. It's kind of got a weird name, H-O-O-P-L-A. It's just the name of the vendor that kind of aggregates all the content.
Okay.
Yeah.
Andy, you're community services librarian, is that right?
That is.
All right. What's going on with you?
Well, I'm going to take a minute and brag on my coworkers for a second. So thank you for giving me the time and space to do that. So one of the things that I'm really proud about and I'm really excited about is we have this exhibit currently at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library, and it's called Discover Tech, Engineers Make a World of Difference. And one of the reasons I'm going to do a bit of bragging is we are one of 8 libraries nationwide to be awarded this traveling exhibit. And it's really cool. It is like Science Center in Seattle quality cool. I'm just going to say. I'm going to go with it.
That's pretty good.
I'm going to go with it.
Yeah.
And so there's a ton of hands-on things to do at the exhibit, and there's a lot of stuff to learn about. And so we're very excited that we received the exhibit, that we were awarded it. And then we're also really excited about what we've been doing with the exhibit. So we partnered with the Juneau School District, and we received some funding from the Friends of the Juneau Public Library and the Juneau Community Foundation. And we're working to bring as many K through 5 classrooms to the Valley Library. We started in January. We're going to go through the beginning of April as we can. And we actually had 91 classrooms signed up to come. Which is really cool. So I'm just.
It's what, like 85%?
It's about 85% of the kids in Juneau.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so these field trips, they come, they get a tour, do they hang out and read? How do they look?
Well, they get a tour, so they go through all the different parts of the exhibit, and then they also do a hands-on STEM-based experiment. So for our grades 3, 4, and 5, we did water filtration. So
remind us what STEM is, too, please.
Science, technology, engineering, and math. Thank you so much. I've been living in that world for the last month or two. So for the kind of older grades, we did water filtration. So we started with what we called dirty water. It was tea. Spoiler alert. And we provided, we talked about the engineering method. We talked about why water filtration is important. And then we provided about 11 or 12 different materials. And the kids had to test, like semi-rigorously, what made the water clearer. And so for our younger kids, the K-1 and 2, we're doing an experiment with levers. So we talk about forces of motion, and we talk about the different parts of levers, and then the kids build seesaws. And then once they master that, they're given challenges, like, how can you build a seesaw so that an adult and a kid can play together? Like, what do you have to change?
This is interesting. When I was a kid, I don't know that we were doing experiments at the library, maybe at the kids' museum or something like that. But when did experimentation become a part of your job descriptions?
Well, so the library provides a lot of different stuff, which is really cool. And so we're really well known for providing things like books. But we also like to provide opportunities. And that's to allow, through programming, people to try something new or do something new. So we've always had different types of programs. Authors come to town. And this is just a more interactive and a lot of fun, and so I'm really enjoying it.
It sounds like it.
We actually have another one upcoming, which I'm going to, we have two upcoming.
Two, yeah.
So do you want to talk about
sure,
one
I
first?
Can talk about the one that's coming up quick first. So that we just did a Science Friday. So when school's out of session, one of the programs that we like to offer on Fridays is called Science Friday. And so we just had one out at the Valley Library.
It was really cool.
It was pretty awesome on bridge building. And kids and their families got a chance to build bridges with Legos and, believe it or not, chocolate. And it's pretty impressive how heavy a weight a chocolate bridge can hold. I think we got up to like 30-some-odd pounds.
35 pounds.
35 pounds.
It was the almond chocolate.
No, the almond was the stronger one.
We had three different types,
yeah.
So we tested the different types of chocolate.
Which
to see
could
if there was
sort
a difference.
Of, you know, be similar to adding aggregates to concrete,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Almonds
right,
made
exactly.
Of chocolate.
And it was actually a box weld. So we welded the chocolate into a couple different forms, and then we tested those versus a plain chocolate bar. So really
so
cool.
So can adults come and do experiments too?
Well, so...
Why, yes, they can.
Yes, they can. This particular program was aimed at 7 to 12, but we don't turn anyone away. I mean, we tell everyone that this is kind of the age range that we're targeting. This is probably the group that's going to enjoy it the most, but everyone's welcome. And so that was kind of our older kids. And then next Thursday, March, a week from this Thursday, rather, March 15th, we have our third Thursday family night. And this is also going to be a bridge program, but it's going to be targeted at a younger crowd. So our family nights are slightly, you know, kind of seven is the older end of that age range. But this one is going to be at the Juno Douglas City Museum. And the retired city architect, he's a fantastic guy, Rich Ritter, is going to be talking about bridge building. And, you know, we've got a pretty iconic bridge here in Juno, so he's going to talk a little bit about that. And I don't think we're doing Legos and chocolate at this one, so don't come expecting that. But it'll be fun for younger kids. We'll have a craft provided, and thanks to our friends group, so light supper too at that one. So that's March 15th at the Downtown Museum.
Okay. Where's the best place to find all this information?
On our website, which is www.juno.org/library. We have one more cool upcoming event. And so, like Robert mentioned, on Fridays when school is out, we try to do Science Friday. So we actually have one on March 23rd, because that's the Friday of spring break. And it's a plan a park exercise. So we are going to have somebody come and talk to us about Project Playground and kind of what went into planning the different features on a park. And then kids will get to do their own exercise where they have to think about what features do they want, but like, what does the landscape look like? Do you have water available? And so they'll have to kind of coalesce a whole bunch of information and come up with their perfect park. It's going to be fun.
So much hands-on interactive stuff going on at the library. It sounds like a lot of fun.
It's a great job. So much fun.
Excellent. Can you give us the website once more, please?
I would love to. It is www.juno.org/library.
Okay. We've been speaking with Andy Kirsch and Robert Barr about all things library. You just got the website there. Anything else that either of you would like to add to the conversation?
I'll just do a quick little plug. One of the things that I've been talking about with various acquaintances is another database that we got pretty recently called ValueLine. It's all about investing. So if you are an investor, and if you have retirement savings, you are by definition an investor. This is a great database to check out. So it's got all kinds of information about investment options, you know, stocks and mutual funds and all that sort of thing, lots of different rankings and exciting stuff there. If you live in or are interested in that world, we've got something for everything. Chocolate bridges to investing.
Thank you too.
Thank you.
Madam Librarian, what can I do, my dear, to catch your ear? I love you madly, madly, Madam Librarian. Marion, heaven help us if the library caught on fire and the volunteer hose brigade men had to whisper the news to man. Madam Librarian, what can I do, my dear, to make it clear? I need you badly, badly, Madam Librarian. Marion, if I stumble and I busted my whatchamacallit, I could lie on your floor unnoticed till my body had turned to Cambrian. Madam Librarian, now in the moonlight a man could sing it. In the moonlight, and a fellow would know that his darling had heard every word of his song with the moonlight helping along. But when I try in here to tell you, dear, I love you madly, madly, Madam Librarian. Marion, it's a long lost cause I can never win, for the civilized world accepts as unforgivable sin any talking out loud with any librarian such as Marion. Madam Librarian.
Hi, I'm Riley Woodford. Every fall, we witness the annual migration of students to schools where Discovery Southeast naturalists take them outside to learn. And every spring, Discovery Southeast gathers resources for their annual award banquet and auction. This year, honoring Harborview school teacher Jennifer Thompson for her outstanding work connecting kids with nature. Saturday, March 10th at 5 p.m. at the Jack. Tickets and information at discoverysoutheast.org.
Well, speaking of Discovery Southeast, joining us here in the studio now is Sean Isley and Allison Smith. Sean is the ED over at Discovery Southeast, and Allison Smith is on the board and teaches first grade at Auk Bay Elementary. Welcome to the show, you two.
Hey, thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Well, Riley just said it all. Is there anything else we need to know about Saturday?
Get your tickets now, discoverysoutheast.org. We're at the Jack this year, which is really fun. I love the atmosphere there. It's a great event. But we have sold out a couple times there, so please get your tickets now.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. You get
We have a lot of great auction items this year. We have some auction items from Alaska Airlines.
Yeah, always Uncruise Adventures donates a cruise that is kind of the headlining thing. This year's is in Baja, so what a great way to get out in the middle of fall, maybe go down to Baja and take a small ship cruise for two.
For two.
Yeah.
Wow.
So amazing experience. And a lot of great stuff. Above and Beyond Alaska supports us with a ton of support throughout the year for our kayak programs, and they've donated several trips. In fact, they're hosting a trip down to Pat Creek. All the proceeds are donated to Discovery Southeast. That's in honor of Ken Leghorn. All kinds of great stuff like that will be at the event.
Excellent. I think a lot of our listeners know what Discovery Southeast does, nature education for kids, but I know that you've expanded recently. Allison, you want to tell us about what you're up to?
Well, something that's exciting this year is that we've expanded our nature studies program to kindergarten through second grade, and when in the past it's been third through fifth. So my first graders were able to get out this year with Discovery for the first time. And we're looking forward to going again. The other thing that's happening at the banquet is that Jennifer Thompson will be there to accept her award. And I know that I have found working with her inspiring, and I'm looking forward to seeing what she has to say, too.
Yeah. So tell our listeners about this trip that you went on in the fall with your first graders and a naturalist from Discovery Southeast. Take us on that trip with you a little bit, if you would.
Our naturalist, Jana Lynn, came into the classroom and prepped the kids ahead of time. We were talking about sort of seasonal changes and also day length and daylight, which can be sort of difficult topics to address in a first grade classroom. So we did some pre-teaching and then got the kids out there playing games and figuring out what was around them and just practicing being in what we call the outdoor classroom. So it's different than just going out and playing at recess, that we know that we're actually outside to experience things and also to learn.
And, you know, I hear a lot about screen time these days and kids getting too much screen time. For you as a first grade teacher, what is that like, getting them away from screens and outside?
It's really fun, and it's kind of a test of the boundaries. Every time I take them out, we sort of need to remember that we're in a classroom, that we're out there to learn, and also we're out there to have fun. And so the enthusiasm that kids have when they're outside is something that I don't think I can match anywhere else. I don't think I can compete with nature for something that will hold their attention and inspire their curiosity. We have been lucky to have such a big snow year this year, and so getting kids out into the snow is something that's pretty unique and amazing too, because, you know, they can jump and fall on the ground with little repercussion. So different seasons, definitely there are different things that kids experience and really get into. And snow is one of my favorite things to take kids out in.
Right. And it also leaves signs and trails for everything. You can see where everything's been, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's see. Now, Sean, you're in all grades at almost all elementary schools?
Yeah, so that was a big jump this year, including K through 2, so now it's K through 5 at all the elementary schools. We're also offering after-school programs at the Title I schools for elementary schools, and we have after-school programs at both middle schools, and it integrates the Sources of Strength Suicide Prevention program, focusing on wellness outdoors and recreation in the middle school level.
Okay.
And, of course, in the elementary, it's tied to the science curriculum.
And I saw there were, I think, teacher in-service days or school things happening the other day, and I saw the van drive by with a bunch of kids in it.
Discovery Days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are great programs. I think we might still have a couple spots left for Discovery Days during school holidays or spring break. And something that's great about those programs is that although there is a tuition, it's sliding scale, kind of name your own price. And so that can go all the way down to zero. And so if you know a kid who would really benefit in that program, 7 to 12 years old, go online to discoverysoutheast.org and sign them up.
But of course, none of this is free, is it? And that's where the auction comes in. That's how our listeners can support Discovery Southeast.
Absolutely.
This Saturday. Tell us a little bit about what we can expect on Saturday.
There's always a great live and silent auction, including some fantastic desserts. Let's see. There'll be a salmon dinner. It's donated salmon from Alaska Glacier Seafoods. And there'll be a no-host bar from K&L donated some beer and wine for the event. And, you know, the big highlight is really the teacher award. It's so nice to recognize a teacher each year. We have great teachers in Juneau, and it's great to shine the spotlight on a couple of them. Jennifer's been known for her hands-on science work throughout the district for years, and we're really proud to be recognizing her this year.
Okay, and that's 5 p.m. this Saturday?
Correct.
And I should back up when I say nothing's free. It is, in a sense, free for the students, right? And the schools kind of sort of the PTA explain how it all works?
Absolutely, yeah. That's something I love is that by reaching all the schools and all the grades, we essentially bring nature education to every child in our community. And, yeah, the PTAs contribute a portion of that, and the rest is all raised from grants and donations, including at this banquet.
All right, Discovery Southeast Banquet and Auction this Saturday at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. You've been listening to Sean Isley and Allison Smith of Discovery Southeast. Where's the best place to find more information?
DiscoverySoutheast.org.
Otherwise, you can meet them in person this Saturday, 5 p.m. at the Jack. Thanks, you both. Anything else you want to add?
We hope to see you at the banquet. Get your tickets now.
You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 6th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host, and we're right at the bottom of the hour. Here in Studio A now is Jeff Brady. He is one of the directors of the Northwards Writer Symposium that takes place in Skagway in May, and we're going to be talking about that symposium. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Well, thank you, Scott. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you here. You were telling me this will be your ninth year?
Yeah, this is our ninth year. It's hard to believe we're almost at a decade doing this. And, it started as an idea of our good friend Buckwheat Donahue, who's also on our committee, and while he was still the tourism director of Skagway, to just do something a little different to try and get people to come to Skagway during the sort of the shoulder season. And there was really only one or two others like this in the state at the time. One of them had kind of retired itself, so we thought Southeast would be a good spot to start hosting another one in Skagway, with its kind of writing heritage. Jack London and Robert Service wrote about it a lot. We thought it would be a good thing to get going, and it's proven to be very successful.
Okay, and so up to 40 people can join the symposium. What's it look like from day to day?
Well, we bring in a keynote writer every year, usually a name author. This year it's Susan Orlean, who's the author of The Orchid Thief, and a book about Rin Tin Tin also, which is very popular, about tracing its line from a World War I hero in the battlefield to worldwide movie star. And then we have a number of Alaska authors that come in, and I'll just list them here real quick. Ernestine Hayes here from Juneau, and Emily Wall, also from Juneau, will be coming up. Ernestine, of course, is an Alaska writer laureate, author of Blind Indian, Tale of Raven. Another writer laureate, former Frank Sose from Fairbanks, and then we have Ray Troll coming, which will be kind of an interesting twist to add with his art and Etch's musicality as well. And he'll be kind of teaming up with a Portland writer named Willie Vlaughton, who's gotten to be very popular for like a music and storytelling panel. And then we also have Colleen Mondor, who's a Washington writer now, but former Fairbankson, who wrote a very interesting book a few years ago called The Map of My Dead Pilots. And it's all about bush pilots and in the interior and all the risks they were taking. And we have a lot of different panel topics that we talk about and workshops, kind of a mix.
And you just mentioned writers all over the spectrum, poetry, creative nonfiction, fiction. So it sounds like it's for everyone.
Yeah, we have different topics on different things, whether it's from characters to, say, the art of hope and storytelling. Susan's going to be leading one called Real and Fake Facts and How to Use Them, which is kind of appropriate to the times. And
okay, so it starts May 30th. What day of the week is that?
It's a Wednesday, so usually most people traveling from down here will take the ferry up usually on Tuesday or Wednesday. We just kick off with a kind of a meet and greet that night, and then we just roll right into sessions on Thursday and Friday, and we mix in a few fun events in the evening as well. There's a barbecue out at our place at Alderworks in Dyea. There's a train ride, trail ride is what we call it, where we go up to the Lawton Glacier Forest Service cabin and have a workshop up there or hike to the glacier. And then we finish it all off with a very nice keynote banquet out at Jewel Gardens.
And let's see, June 2nd, what day of the week is that?
That's a Sunday, or Saturday. It goes Wednesday night through Saturday evening.
Wow. Susan Orlean, Ernestine Hayes, Frank Sose, what a crew.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, and a lot of our Alaska authors are new to us this year, are new to the Northwoods this year, so it'll be, for those people who've been before, it'll still be quite different
Okay.
Helpful and entertaining, I hope.
Jeff, if somebody wants to sign up or get more info, where should they go?
Well, because our website it's a mouthful. I'm just going to tell people to go to just Google Northwoods Writers Symposium. The name, it's called nwwritersS.com, but it's easier to just go Google Northwoods and you'll find us. And you can get on there and look over everything. Our schedule is now posted for the 4 days. And, And you can also sign up for UAS credit, and there's a credit available, and you can register online on the site.
Okay. You've been listening to Jeff Brady talk about the Northwards Writer Symposium. As he says, just go ahead and Google or put Northwards Writer Symposium into your search engine. And it's from May 30th to June 2nd up in Skagway. There are still slots available. And Jeff, did you say that it sort of includes meals and stuff, or
it includes a lot of meals, not all of them. We give everybody kind of a continental breakfast every morning, and then there's a couple of dinners that are catered as well.
And lodging?
Not lodging, no.
Okay, so people need to find their own lodging.
Yeah, people have to find their own lodging.
All right, Jeff, thanks for coming on the show. Northwards Writer Symposium, May 30th through June 2nd in Skagway. Anything else you want to add, Jeff?
No, that's all. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Target on their back. Tobacco companies have a history of marketing flavored tobacco products to attract kids. In recent years, there has been an explosion of sweet flavored tobacco products, like e-cigarettes and cigars, with flavors like gummy bears and cotton candy. Youth use may lead to nicotine addiction. Flavors can create the impression that a product is less harmful. encourage youth to stand up to the tobacco industry by not buying into their deception. This message is brought to you by the Partnership for Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 6th, 2018, about 20 minutes until the top of the hour. In the studio now is Alec Mestag. He is the Director of Energy Services over at AELMP. Brenda Taylor, who is the Juneau STEM Coalition Chair, and Cherry Eklund, a first grade teacher over at Harborview. We're going to be talking all things science, technology, engineering, and math in the school district. Welcome all of you to the show.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Should we start with you, Brenda, the Juneau STEM Coalition?
Sure. So we are the Juneau STEM Coalition, and we're just trying to get more STEM experiences to more kids in Juneau. And so this particular event is geared toward K-5 families, March 28th, so it's in 3 weeks. And we have 2 hours of an expert kind of talking about the importance of STEM and doing some activities with kids, and then an hour of community member experts doing lots of different kinds of activities with kids and sort of modeling for families a little bit what STEM activities look like, and then a little bit of a wrap-up of this expert, Ken Wesson, at the end about how STEM is so good for kids' brains. So what we'd like to do here is particularly talk about getting more community members to help us make this be a really great success.
Excellent. Cherry, you teach first grade over at Harborview, right?
Yeah, I do.
What does this program mean for you? What does it mean when you get help teaching these subjects?
Well, this is our first time to come together and try to create a whole community-wide event like this for K-5 families, kindergarten through fifth grade. And really, science and technology, engineering, math, it is so fun and engaging and a great way to get families involved. And it's important because so many jobs and careers out there, we're building tomorrow's future. So we want to get families involved and also just see the joy and fun in experiencing something like this together, those moments where they have aha moments. It's pretty magical as a teacher to see that, and it's nice to have families join in and see that as well.
Okay, well, get out your pencils, and we'll give all the details for this K through 5 family night. Over on my stereo left is Alec Mestag. He's the Director of Energy Services for AELMP. This is exactly what you're trying to do, right, Brenda, is get experts like this teaching kids about, say, electricity. What have you had an opportunity to do so far with kids, Alec?
Well, I get the opportunity to go out periodically and do what I'm going to be doing for this night, which is we have a large power line display, like a miniature power line display where we can give kids an opportunity to just kind of see what the what electricity can do.
Probably hard to say touch the power lines, right?
Yeah. And so, it's a display that really illustrates why you do not touch the power line. So it's a miniature power line display. So there's little mini power lines, and then I can take little objects and push them up close to the lines and have the electricity arc over to like a little figurine of a guy in a tree who then gets zapped, and it's a good lesson in just what electricity can do. And so it's nice because it's really fun to watch. It's very exciting. The kids get very engaged, and then it provides a good opportunity to talk about, well, what's really happening here, and why is it important to be aware of this, but not only that, just what's behind it, why is this important in our lives in general.
And Brenda, as you've observed this, the kids, they must really enjoy it.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't get to see a lot of it in person. I try to help people get coordinated and organized. The other thing that Alec did for us last year was actually not so much electricity. It was the geothermal, how the pool works, right?
Yeah.
And there were kids coming to the pool for their swim lessons, and the teacher said, hey, we're here. Could somebody explain how this pool is actually heated?
Yeah, so we took a group of students down into the mechanical room at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center and talked about how the geothermal heat pump system works to provide heat to the aquatic center.
Fun. Man, that sounds like a lot.
An easy 20-minute, totally made sense, answered the questions that the kids were having about how does the world that we are right in work.
Seems like the field trips they used to take on Sesame Street, right, where you got
exactly,
to go see.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
There was a reason those were so popular on Sesame Street, because kids really love them. Those are the questions they have.
Cherry, I know as a teacher, you have your hands full right? All teachers do, especially in elementary school. What does it mean for you when you can have somebody come in and sort of team teach with you, or you know, teach about these things?
Well, I think a great thing about this event is we have the people in our community that are actually the scientists and engineer and mathematicians, and they're coming in and actually leading it because they have knowledge that I don't. And we want it to be hands-on and engaging for the kids. And so the more you are an expert in a field, the better you're able to do that. And if you're an expert in the field, we would love for you to contact us at junostemcoalition@gmail.com. And if you're a little nervous about it, because sometimes it can be intimidating to work with children, we have experts or teachers. That's where I come in. I'll help you kind of problem solve how to make it hands-on and engaging and meaningful for families and kids. So I think it's a nice compliment, their expertise, and we're happy to help out however they need to feel more comfortable jumping in and doing it.
All right, Brenda.
So, Scott, there's some way to use your engine, your car, that, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So it's fueled by?
Use vegetable oil.
We could put that right out. It's going to be at TM, March 28th. It'll still be light outside. So if you wanted to set something out outside that kids could see how your car works, that would be great.
Okay, that sounds like fun. And we have Alex on electricity. What other kind of volunteers might you need for this event or for the program in general?
So for this event, we're really looking for all sorts of volunteers. They could be scientists who are, you know, biologists and doing fisheries. So we've got a lot of that here in Juneau. Electricians, either who are doing the managerial part or who are out there on the lines or who are what are they doing? New buildings, right? Putting in new electrical lines, plumbing, people who are Tlingit elders and could talk about how the Tlingit's been understanding the world for a long, long time. How do engines work? How do, give me some more ideas here.
Computer science stuff?
If you can have something pretty, this evening is an hour for kids to go from sort of activity to activity. And so you could expect a kid might be there for maybe 15, 20 minutes. And I think that's a little less hands-on for this event than we would normally like. If you want to do computer science with kids, yes, please do go to junostem.org and fill out our STEM contacts list, but not so much with computers for this event. We really want kids to be able to see something actively happening or doing something actively, like the snakes come and they're raptors come, or the Discovery Southeast brings their bones and skulls and says, so why do these teeth look different on these two different skulls, that kind of thing.
Now, Alec, do you do this as a volunteer, or does AELMP let you do this on the clock? How's that work for you?
Oh, this is the best part of my job. I get to do this on the clock. So we, you know, one of the tasks that I have at AELMP is to try to get out as much as possible to talk to kids about why it's important to be safer on electrical lines. And obviously we got a lot of wire hung out there, and it is something that's important to be aware of for all of us. But in particular, a lot of us don't get electrical safety education, or, you know, it's not part of the standard curriculum in the schools. And so, you know, there's only so many opportunities to be exposed to that. So this is one of the things I do on a fairly regular basis. I also try to volunteer in the schools and really at any opportunity that I have to talk about anything related to energy. You know, so I did, I went into one of the Mendenhall River classrooms last year to talk about heat and heat loss and how insulation works, and did a little activity with kids over a period of a few days. That was really fun.
Was it intimidating for you when you first had contact with kids, and has that changed over time?
I've never really felt too intimidated around kids. I was fortunate enough to grow up with a mom who worked with kids a lot, and so I was around kids a lot all through high school, and then I coached soccer for a lot of years, and so for me it's always been pretty comfortable. The thing that I love about it the most, though, especially on these events when we get to go into things like the mechanical room at the aquatic center, is the questions are great, you know, and they're all over the place, and I feel like it's one of the times where I'm really comfortable just answering the question as it's asked without having to think about, you know, there's no motivation other than curiosity. And so it's a really fun time to, and in some of ways you can also just kind of lead kids to the parts that you think are cool, which you know, mean that you tend to express more enthusiasm over the topic, which is contagious, and the kids feel that enthusiasm and they get engaged also.
Can I add to that? Because
please.
I think that is what we as teachers really, really love, because when the kids ask those questions, that's when I'm at a loss. My science level is not very high. But if I've got an expert who can ask all the start to answer the questions that the kids have, that's when the kids get really excited, and it's super, super useful for the teachers.
Alec, would you suggest this to other professionals who might be listening right now out in our community?
Oh, absolutely. I would encourage, you know, anyone who has expertise in a field, especially if you personally feel passionate about the field that you're in, then I think it's very important to get out and explain to kids and why you're passionate about it and what's interesting about it, because they are interested too. And plus, it's just fun. It's fun to watch. Watch, you know, the gears kind of turn as you start explaining different things and see, it's fun to see where the questions lead.
Okay. And I suspect organizations would lend their employees to this endeavor. What do you think, everybody?
Well, we've in the past had wonderful support in Juneau in this community for our local school one. So I'm hoping we have the same support for this community-wide one.
And this is like a networking event, would you say? How would you sort of characterize this on March 28th?
I think this is more a fun event for families.
Okay. All right.
And we're hoping we get 250 people to come.
Excellent.
So in order to have 250 people, we need to have 40 to 50 STEM experts leading activities.
Excellent. Can you give us the details again, please?
Yeah, so mark your calendar for Wednesday, March 28th, 5 to 7 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School. And it should be a great time.
STEM night for K through 5 families. All right.
And we'll come back closer to the date to remind families about it, but right now we're really, really hoping we can entice some more community members to come and lead activities. Call us up and say, I'm kind of interested, I don't know what it would be, but or I'd help, or I'd do it if I had help.
Where can we call you or find you online?
So we can call me personally, 321-1433. You can email us at junostemcoalition@gmail.com, and you can go to our website, which is junostem.org, and that will have lots and lots of information there as well. So we are findable.
All right, junostem.org. We have been speaking with Brenda Taylor, Alec Mestag, and Cherry Eklund. They're all part of the Juno STEM Coalition. Thank you all for coming on the show. Is there anything else you want to add?
Thank you for your enthusiasm every time that we come.
I love it.
See your car in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks very much.
This is Bird Note. When a perched male ruby-throated hummingbird raises its head toward the sun at just the right angle, its throat glitters like a crimson spotlight. When it turns its head slightly, the bird's throat no longer gleams. It appears colorless, dark. A hummingbird's brilliant throat feathers are called its gorget. The term comes from days of old, when a knight in armor wore a metallic collar, or gorget, to protect his throat. The hummingbird's intense glint is the result of iridescence rather than colored pigments. The bird's throat feathers contain minutely thin, film-like layers of platelets, set like tiles in a mosaic against a darker background. Light waves reflect and refract off the mosaic, creating color in the manner of sun glinting off a film of oil on water. Listen to this male Anna's hummingbird putting his glitter to work. There he goes, diving in display toward the female. He plunges downward almost vertically, achieving tremendous speed. Then he levels off and heads straight into the sun, which makes his gorget glow with iridescent brilliance, like a tiny knight in shining armor. You can see a photo of a hummingbird's gorget at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Hey, it's Paula Poundstone here of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I'm looking forward to seeing each and every one of you Junoans in Juneau this week. My special show for KTOO is coming up this Thursday, March 8th at Centennial Hall. If you haven't bought your tickets yet, what are you waiting for? The last minute? Well, that's where we're at. Congratulations. You've successfully procrastinated. So stop posting yet another selfie of you at the glacier and get your tickets at KTOO.org, the station and the jack.
Speaking of Paula Poundstone, I had the great opportunity to talk to her by phone this morning. My full interview with her will be up on our website here pretty soon, but here's a little snippet about what we talked about. We are all, of course, as public media fans and listeners, huge fans of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and I was just wondering why you and that show's model are such a great fit. I was wondering how you would explain that, just your style of comedy and how that show works. What is it that explains the great chemistry that you have?
Well, you know, from the first time I was on the show and when I, my first, you know, trial run, back then we didn't have an audience in front of us and we were not all in the same room as we are now when you hear the show. Now we're somewhere. We're either in Chicago in the basement of a bank, in this auditorium with about 500 people in front of us, or we're, you know, somewhere else around the country in some sort of theater. But we're all together. Whereas when I first started doing the show, you just went to the studio near your house, you know, wherever you lived, nearest your house, and you were hooked up via wire with everybody else, and there was no live audience. But from the minute I sat down in the chair and the show began, and they explained to me how it worked. I had never heard it before. But from the minute I sat down in the chair, you know, you wear a goofy headset. In my headset, the director would say, jump in anytime, say anything you want. That is extraordinary in the show business. In any, I can only think of, you know, one other time where anyone ever said that to me. And the fact that they bring people on, like myself, and allow them to, you know, do what they do, well, that's the that's the genius of it. Sorry, I'm joking to that. I'm sorry. I don't think it's nearly as communicable as they say. The show business, as a general rule, has a very, very long history of hiring people and then telling them not to do what they do. So this was extraordinary. And I think it's just wise of them to do that. So we all, so you think of stuff and you say it. And, you know, sometimes it sticks. Sometimes it doesn't, I suppose. But for the most part, that sort of freewheeling feeling. The number one comment that I hear when people come up to me on the street and say something about Wait, Wait, is you guys sound like you're having so much fun. And you know what? We are.
So that was Paula Poundstone. Our show is at 7 p.m. on Thursday. Doors open at 5 o'clock. More tickets available at ktoo.org. Tomorrow on a Juno afternoon, Shelley Delaney will be your host, and we'll get a preview of the upcoming production by the Juno Douglas Little Theater with music director Grace Lee. Kyla Royce will highlight Friday's Fly Fishing Film Festival. Link Olson will talk about Alaska's hoary marmots. And we'll talk with Jeff Reclow about Eagle Crest. It's currently 29 degrees here in the capital city, and the forecast for tonight calls for scattered snow showers mainly after midnight. And tomorrow, Wednesday, snow showers with a high near 32. Thursday calls for snow likely before noon, then rain and snow likely. Thank you for tuning in to a Juno afternoon.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on Translators KTOO.